All right, let's dive into some interesting legal stuff today.
Yeah.
We're going to be looking at two cases.
Okay.
And get this, they're both called Roland v. State.
Yeah, you had two Roland v. State cases. But, and here's the thing, they're totally different.
Yeah.
One's from Oklahoma,
Right.
the other was from Alabama.
Okay.
Totally different situations.
So like two sides of the same coin almost.
Yeah, exactly.
Same name, different story.
Yeah, and it's going to be fun to kind of see how these things,
Yeah.
these cases with the same name play out so differently.
Totally.
Yeah.
And we've got some crazy stuff to unpack here. We're talking burglary, assault, juries doing their own thing,
Yeah.
questions of intent, even some Fifth Amendment stuff with confessions and all that.
Yeah, it's a good mix.
That's a lot. That's a lot. So to keep things straight, let's start with our first Roland v. State.
Okay.
This one's coming at us from Oklahoma back in 1984.
Hey.
Meet Anthony Ray Roland.
Right, Anthony Ray Rollin.
He's facing charges of burglary and assault with a dangerous weapon. Sounds pretty open and shut, right?
You'd think so, but here's where it gets interesting.
Yeah, tell me.
The jury comes back with a verdict that just seems, well, a little weird on the surface.
Okay, I'm intrigued. What'd they say?
They found him guilty of burglary,
Okay.
but not guilty of the assault.
Wait, hold on. So they thought he broke in, but didn't assault anyone.
That's what the verdict says, yeah.
How does that even work? Like, if you're breaking into a place, isn't the assumption that you're gonna, commit a crime?
Well, that's usually the case, yeah.
Okay.
But the law sometimes lets juries do this kind of thing.
Really?
It's called the inconsistent verdicts doctrine.
Inconsistent verdicts doctrine. Sounds like a fancy way of saying juries can just do what they want.
Ha, no, not exactly. It just means that juries can sometimes come back with verdicts that seem to contradict each other.
Okay, I see, I see. So the courts, they have to respect that, even if it doesn't quite make sense.
Yeah, the court's got to take each charge separately and look at the evidence for that charge on its own.
Okay, so walk me through this. The jury didn't buy the assault charge, right?
Right.
But they still found him guilty of burglary. So how does that work, legally speaking?
Well, the thing is, with burglary, the prosecution doesn't have to prove he actually assaulted anyone. They just have to prove he intended to commit some crime when he went into that apartment.
Oh, I see, I see. So the intent is what matters here.
Exactly. It's about the state of mind when he entered the place.
Okay, that makes sense. What was Roland's side of the story? Did he have an explanation for being in the apartment?
Yeah, his defense was that he was just going there to check on his kids.
Okay.
Claimed he had no intention of doing anything criminal.
Interesting.
Yeah.
But clearly, the jury didn't fully buy that,
Right.
right? I mean, they acquitted him of the assault, but still got him on the burglary.
Yep, that's how it shook out.
This seems like a pretty big lesson for both sides, the prosecutors and the defense attorneys, right? Like, what can we learn from this case?
Yeah, definitely. For prosecutors, I think it shows how important it is to really think through how a jury might interpret things. You know, maybe they should have charged him with burglary with the intent to commit any crime.
Right. So be more general, cover all your bases.
Exactly. Just in case the jury gets hung up on the specifics of the assault charge.
Right.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
What about the defense attorneys? What's the takeaway for them?
I think it shows that even if your client gets off on one charge, you got to keep fighting hard on the others.
Yeah.
You can't assume that a not guilty on one thing automatically means they'll get a pass on something else.
Makes sense. Especially when you're dealing with, like, intent, right?
Yeah.
That can be tough to prove or disprove.
Absolutely. It's all about the details. You got to really dig into the evidence and make sure the jury sees things from your client's perspective.
It all comes down to the details, huh? The specific wording, the evidence, the intent. It's a reminder that in law, those little things can make a huge difference.
That's the truth, and that's what makes it so fascinating to dissect these cases. It's like a puzzle sometimes.
Yeah, a really complex puzzle with real-life consequences.
Absolutely.
All right, now that we've untangled that Oklahoma case, let's switch gears
Okay.
and head down south
Right.
to Alabama for our second Roland v. State.
Sounds good. Let's do it.
This one takes us to 1986.
Okay.
We meet Sidney Roland, and like our first Roland, he's also facing a burglary charge.
Another burglary case, but this time the stakes are way higher.
Oh, how so?
Well, Alabama has this thing called the Habitual Offender Act.
Habitual Offender Act. Okay, I'm listening.
Basically, if you've got prior convictions, the punishments for new offenses can get a whole lot tougher.
Oh, so they throw the book at you.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
It can add a whole new level of complexity to a case.
So Sydney's dealing with more than just this one burglary charge. Like, his past is coming back to haunt him.
Exactly. And because of his record, he was potentially facing a life sentence if found guilty of this burglary.
A life sentence for burglary. Wow, that's intense.
Yeah, the Habitual Offender Act can be pretty harsh.
Makes you think about, you know, the fairness of it all.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, another deep dive for another time.
Yeah, we can save that one for later.
Exactly. For now, let's focus on the legal arguments at play in Sydney's case.
Right. So Sydney tried to get his confession thrown out.
Oh, interesting. Why? What happened?
He claimed that the police coerced him into confessing.
Coerced him. Now we're getting into some Fifth Amendment territory, right?
Yeah, that's a big part of it. The right against self-incrimination.
Okay, so tell me, what exactly did the police do that Sydney claimed was coercive? Like, what were their tactics? Did they threaten him?
Well, the officer told Sydney during questioning that he would let the judge and prosecutor know if Sydney cooperated.
Hmm. That's interesting. So not a direct threat, but maybe an implied promise. Like, help us out and we'll help you out.
Yeah, it's a bit of a gray area, right? On the surface, it might seem like a normal thing for a police officer to say.
Right. Just trying to get information, build a case.
Right. But it's those subtle nuances that can become really important when you're trying to figure out if something crosses the line into coercion.
Right, right. So the officer didn't come right out and say, confess and you'll get a lighter sentence.
Nope. There was no explicit promise like that.
Okay. So it's all about how that statement is interpreted, right? Like, did Sydney reasonably believe he was being offered a deal?
Exactly. And that's where the legal battle gets interesting. The courts, they have to look at everything, all the circumstances surrounding the confession.
Totality of the circumstances, right?
Yeah.
We've heard that before.
Yeah, exactly. It's not just about one single thing the officer said. They look at the whole picture.
So, like, how the police were acting, the exact wording of the statement, Sydney's state of mind at the time, all of that.
Uh-huh. They even consider whether the defendant was read their Miranda rights, you know, the whole nine yards.
Wow. A lot to consider. It sounds like a pretty subjective analysis.
It can be, yeah. It's not always black and white, which is why these cases can be so fascinating. But in Sydney's case, the court decided to admit the confession.
So they didn't think the officer's statement was coercive enough to throw it out.
Right. They concluded that the officer's statement wasn't really a quid pro quo agreement.
A quid pro quo, like a this for that kind of deal.
Yeah, like a clear exchange of favors.
Right.
The court found that the officer didn't actually have the authority to guarantee a lighter sentence.
Okay, so just saying he'd let the judge and prosecutor know isn't the same as making a promise.
Exactly. It's more like, hey, I'll pass this information along. Plus, Sydney waived his Miranda rights, which kind of weakens his claim of coercion.
Right. That waiver usually makes things tougher for the defendant.
Yeah. Once you waive those rights, it becomes harder to argue that anything you said afterwards was involuntary or coerced.
So what's the big takeaway for lawyers from this Alabama Roland v. State? Seems like the line between a permissible police tactic and coercion can be super blurry.
Yeah, it can be really tricky. I think this case just highlights how crucial it is to really understand those fine lines.
Yeah.
You know, how to spot those subtle cues in a police interrogation that might suggest an implied promise or undue pressure.
So for lawyers defending people accused of crimes, they've really got to break down every interaction with the police, looking for anything that might have influenced a confession.
Exactly. And they need to be ready to challenge the admissibility of that confession if they think it was obtained improperly.
All right, so we've journeyed through two very different Roland v. State cases. One dealing with those head-scratching jury verdicts, and the other diving into the complexities of coerced confessions. It's amazing how a shared name can mask such different legal battles.
It's wild, right? It just goes to show that the same legal principle can play out in totally different ways depending on the facts of the case.
Yeah, and it emphasizes how important it is for lawyers to not just know the rules, but to understand how those rules are applied and challenged in various situations.
It's not just about memorizing the law. It's about knowing how to use it strategically.
Exactly. So looking back at both of these Roland v. State cases, any common threads or overarching lessons that stand out to you?
You know, I think both cases really highlight how important specifics are in the legal world.
Specifics.
Yeah, like in Oklahoma, the way they worded that burglary charge and the exact evidence they presented about intent, that was key to getting the conviction.
Right, right. And in Alabama, it all boiled down to the precise wording of what the officer said to Sydney.
Exactly. Was it a clear quid pro quo offer or was it just a neutral statement? That one detail determined whether the confession was admissible.
So it seems like attention to detail is absolutely crucial in law.
Absolutely. Every word, every phrase, every piece of evidence can be scrutinized and interpreted in different ways.
Right. And lawyers need to be able to anticipate those interpretations, don't they?
Absolutely. It's not enough to just understand the broad strokes of the law. You got to master those nuances and use them to your advantage to get the best possible outcome for your client.
It's a good reminder for all of us, whether we're lawyers or not, that those seemingly small details can have a big impact.
Yeah, you never know what little thing might end up making a huge difference.
Well said. And on that note, I'm going to leave our listeners with a final thought-provoking question. Think about the Oklahoma case, right?
Okay.
Could things have gone differently for Roland if the prosecution had been a little more broad with their charges?
Interesting question.
Instead of focusing specifically on assault, what if they had charged him with burglary with the intent to commit any crime? Would that have changed the outcome? Something to ponder as you continue to explore these cases and all the legal twists and turns they offer?
Yeah, great point. It really makes you think about the strategic decisions prosecutors have to make and how those decisions can impact the whole case.
Exactly. This deep dive has been a whirlwind, right? From inconsistent verdicts to coerced confessions and all the importance of those little details that can make or break a case.
It's been a great exploration of some really interesting legal concepts.
We encourage everyone to dive deeper into these cases, read the full opinions, and draw your own conclusions. Who knows? Maybe we'll revisit Roland v. State in a future episode. There's always more to uncover in the ever-evolving world of law.
Always something new to learn.
Until then, keep those legal minds sharp.
You got it.
Okay, so we saw how those inconsistent verdicts played out in Oklahoma. Now let's jump over to Alabama.
All right.
For our second Roland v. State case. This one's from 1986.
Okay.
We've got Sidney Roland. And like our first Roland, he's up against a burglary charge, too.
Another burglary case, but this one, things get a little more serious.
Ooh, what makes this one different?
Alabama has this law called the Habitual Offender Act. And it basically means if you've already been convicted of some crimes, the penalties for any new offenses can get a whole lot tougher.
Oh, so they really crack down on repeat offenders.
Yeah, definitely. It has a whole other layer of complexity to these cases.
So Sidney's facing a tougher situation than Anthony in Oklahoma because of his past convictions.
Exactly. And because of that Habitual Offender Act, Sidney was actually looking at a possible life sentence for this burglary charge.
A life sentence for burglary? That seems, I don't know, pretty extreme.
Yeah, it can be pretty harsh, that's for sure.
Makes you think about the whole purpose of punishment, right?
Right.
Like, when does it go too far?
Definitely a conversation worth having.
Another deep dive for another time.
Exactly.
But for now, let's stick with Sidney's case and the legal arguments at play.
Okay, so Sidney, he tries to get his confession thrown out.
Interesting. Why do you want to do that?
He claimed that the police forced him to confess.
Forced him. So, like, they coerced him into admitting guilt.
Yep, that's the argument. And this is where the Fifth Amendment comes into play.
Right, that whole right against self-incrimination thing.
Exactly. You can't be forced to testify against yourself.
So what did the police do that Sidney considered coercive? Give me the details.
Well, during the interrogation, the officer told Sidney that he'd let the judge and prosecutor know if Sidney cooperated with the investigation.
Okay, so not a direct threat, but maybe like a subtle hint that things could go better for him if he talked.
Yeah, it's a bit of a gray area, right? Like, is that just a normal part of police work?
Right, like encouraging someone to cooperate.
Right. Or does it cross a line and become coercion?
Right.
Right.
Right. So the officer didn't promise him anything specific, like a reduced sentence or anything like that?
No, nothing that explicit.
So then how do the courts determine if a statement like that is coercive or not?
Well, they use this totality of the circumstances test.
Totality of the circumstances. So it's not just about one specific thing the officer said.
Right. They look at everything. The police conduct, the specific wording of any promises, whether the defendant was read their Miranda rights, the defendant's age and mental state, all of it.
Wow. So they really dig deep into the whole situation, huh?
They do. And ultimately, it comes down to whether they believe the defendant's will was overborne by the police tactics.
It sounds like a pretty complex analysis.
It can be, yeah. It's not always easy to draw a clear line. But in Sidney's case, the court ultimately decided to allow the confession.
So they didn't think the officer's statement was coercive enough to throw it out?
Nope, they didn't. They found that the officer's statement wasn't really a quid pro quo agreement.
A quid pro quo, like a you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours type of deal.
Exactly, like an exchange of favors. The court said the officer didn't actually have the authority to guarantee a lighter sentence. He was just saying he'd pass along the information about Sydney's cooperation.
So basically just a neutral statement of fact, not a promise.
Right. And on top of that, Sydney waived his Miranda rights.
Which usually makes it much harder to argue that a confession was coerced, right?
Exactly. Once you waive those rights, it's tough to go back and say that anything you said was involuntary.
So for all the lawyers out there, what's the key takeaway from this Alabama Roland E. State case? It seems like the line between permissible police tactics and coercion can be incredibly blurry.
It definitely is. It really highlights how important it is to understand the nuances of police interrogations and how those seemingly small details can make a big difference.
Yeah, every word matters.
Exactly. For lawyers representing defendants, it's crucial to really scrutinize every interaction between the police and their client, looking for any hints of implied promises or psychological pressure that might have influenced a confession.
All right, so we've gone through two Roland v. State cases. One focusing on those tricky jury verdicts, and the other one diving into the whole mess of coerced confessions.
Yeah, it's pretty fascinating how the same case name can lead to such different legal issues.
It really shows you how the same legal principle can play out in so many ways, right? Depending on the facts of the case, the context, all that.
Absolutely. And it just underscores how important it is for lawyers to really understand the nuances, you know?
Yeah, like it's not enough to just know the rules in a textbook.
Exactly. You got to know how to apply them in the real world, how to use them, how to challenge them, all that.
Right. Got to be strategic.
Mm.
So looking back at both these Roland v. State cases, any common threads or big takeaways that stand out to you?
You know, thinking about it, I think both cases really show how powerful the specifics are in legal stuff.
Specifics.
Yeah, like in that Oklahoma case, the way they worded the burglary charge and the evidence they used for intent, that played a huge role in getting the conviction.
Right, right. It all came down to the details.
Exactly. And in Alabama, it all boiled down to what the officer actually said to Sydney. Was it a clear quid pro quo or just a neutral statement? That one little detail decided if they could even use the confession.
It's amazing how these tiny things can have such a huge impact.
Yeah, it's all about the details. Sometimes it's not the big picture, it's the small stuff that really matters.
So I guess the lesson here is that attention to detail is key in the legal world.
Absolutely. Every single word, every phrase, every piece of evidence, it can all be looked at and interpreted in different ways. And lawyers need to be ready for that.
Yeah, they gotta think 10 steps ahead, right?
Exactly. It's not just about knowing the law, it's about understanding how it's used and how it can be challenged. You gotta be able to anticipate those arguments and counter them effectively to get the best possible result for your client.
The good reminder for everyone, lawyers or not, that those tiny details can really make a difference in any situation, not just legal stuff.
Yeah, they can have a ripple effect.
Well said. And to wrap things up, I'm going to leave our listeners with one last thought-provoking question. Let's go back to that Oklahoma case.
Okay.
What if the prosecution had broadened their approach? Instead of going after the assault charge specifically, what if they'd charged Roland with burglary with intent to commit any crime?
It's an interesting thought.
Would that have changed things? Could it have led to a different outcome? Something to think about as you keep exploring these cases and all the legal twists and turns they offer.
It really makes you consider the strategy involved in these cases, right?
Yeah.
How the prosecution's choices can shape everything.
Exactly. Well, this deep dive has been quite the journey, hasn't it? We've covered inconsistent verdicts, coerced confessions, and we've seen how those tiny details can make or break a case.
It's been a great exploration of some really important legal concepts.
And as always, we encourage everyone to keep digging deeper, read the full opinions, form your own conclusions, and keep those legal minds sharp.
You got it.